This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm here with Zach. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Thank you so much for having me.
Could you please tell us a little bit yourself and Fleet, your company as well, please?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm by training a software engineer and have been working on the technology that's behind Fleet for a little over 10 years now. So this is kind of a story that starts at Facebook in 2014, building open source software to collect telemetry off of devices, particularly focused on Mac and Linux, which were really underserved at that time. And moving forward, I've been through like a few iterations of consulting and contracting around this software that we open sourced at Facebook. And that kind of leads us up to Fleet, which has been about 4 years now of taking OS Query, that project from Facebook, and turning it into a full tool for security and particular IT teams now to manage the devices within their organization.
And how did you come with the idea? What caused the kind of you thinking that this is a need, I need to go and start? I know it's not an easy thing to do. I know it's a big commitment. So when somebody says, I'm going to start this company with my co-founder or with my team, and you know, I'm going to talk to investors, bring money, employ people, I definitely, you know, you're thinking about all of these. And has to be a very strong reason, something that made you feel like I'm going to do it, and you were very determined to do it at that point. How did it happen?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, actually. So in 2020, sort of during the COVID lockdowns, at that point, I was on my second consulting company. I was working on software related to OS Query, still doing this open source sort of security IT, collecting telemetry from devices and understanding what's going on. And at that point, I was the kind of only developer of the open source, what we called Fleet, or what we called Collide Fleet at the time, which was this OS query management server. And, you know, again, back to 2020 COVID, like sitting alone at home, working on that. And I received a call from Cincy Brandy, the CEO and founder of GitLab. And he said, hey, I'm looking at people who are working on open source projects and who might be interested in turning them into companies, in particular companies that are based on that open core business model that I've kind of pioneered at GitLab. And so he said, hey, like, I'll, you know, if you want to be the CTO, I'll connect you with the CEO and I'll start you off with some investment money because I can already see that this project is pretty well established and has some traction. And we could just get going right now on a company. And, you know, this was 2020 and I was pretty flexible because I was consulting. I had a couple of really awesome clients that I didn't really want to give up, but there was just this amazing opportunity to take all these years of work that I'd been doing that had been kind of slowly piling up and snowballing into something more and work with someone like amazing world-class like Sid and get going with, you know, my co-founder, Mike McNeil, to really build this into a new company.
What a life-changing phone call. That's amazing. So from your perspective, being in charge of technology for this company, why do you think open source play a big role in what you guys do?
Well, there's a few reasons for this. I think one is a bit philosophical for us, which is just that we do believe that organizations, particularly larger commercial organizations, need to manage their computing devices. They need to do it to enable employees to be productive. They need to do it to ensure security on those devices. And we just believe philosophically that this shouldn't be like black box software that's running on these devices. People shouldn't be wondering, what is my organization collecting? People shouldn't be sitting there going, all I see is this thing is using 30% of my CPU and it's probably just invading my privacy. We think that people should know, and people seem to agree with us in especially more modern technology forward organizations where they have their engineers sitting on their MacBooks looking into, hey, what's running here? And I think that that philosophically it's really important that those engineers can go, this is open source. This is, this Fleet stuff, we can see the code all on their GitHub, and Fleet's not all open source, it's open course, but you can read all the source code for sure. And almost all of the agent code is fully open source. You can modify it as well. So, occasionally I think those engineers who go like, oh, this thing is speeding up too many CPU cycles, can go in and see why and fix it and that kind of thing. But most of all, people can understand that their organizations want to protect them, want to protect the organizations, and really don't want to like violate anyone's privacy and that kind of thing. And so I think that the most important thing for me there is the building trust. Then the other part is just the fact that we've got engineers working on these security and IT teams, and they can better integrate with software that they can understand, read the code. And that's what we see our customers doing all the time is, they go, hey, how do you integrate with the APIs in these ways? And we go, well, here's our source code. Like, take a look at how we do it. Adapt the code to how you want. Oh, you need a new feature? Like, sometimes people send us like, hey, I hacked together this little feature. Like, can you turn it into something that we can actually ship in the product? So I think that those are kind of the dual benefits of open source for us in this context.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you're absolutely right. So in what you do, trust plays a huge role. And what is the best way to really make sure that it's there, period? There is no doubt. It's just, hey, I play, I put my cards on the table. And literally, this is, the case. And, this is open source, so there's nothing I'm hiding or doing that you don't know. So that makes perfect sense. Now, in your case, if I'm correct, I listened or maybe read something that in the past you mentioned about the cross-platform endpoint management in your environment. I'm not sure if that's something that, plays a big role in what you guys do, and if you can expand upon it as well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it does play a big role. So if you look at particularly MDM, which stands for mobile device management, but really means sort of any computing device that an end user uses. If you look at that and the sort of leaders of the market there, on the macOS side, you have Jamf, which is great software that a lot of people love, but they do macOS only. And most modern organizations, they're going to have a fairly significant amount of Windows. And then we see plenty of particularly kind of engineering-focused organizations who want to have some Linux there because they've got really key employees in their organization who want to use Linux. And then you've got iOS, iPadOS, and Android. And then Chrome OS. So there's, all these different platforms, all these different ways to manage them. So you look at kind of the top of the market for macOS, it's Jamf. You've got Microsoft that with Intune has a product that's pretty cross-platform, but it's, very tied into the Microsoft ecosystem, the bundled licenses. A lot of people are kind of wanting to stay away from that. And it's also, you know, not to hate on Microsoft too much, but it's kind of typical Microsoft UI experience, like forms and forms and forms and pages of ways to deal with these things. And so we just kind of thought, like, well, we've got a really good way already to gather really good facts and information about the devices across all these different platforms, Mac, Linux, Windows, and Chrome OS. And why don't we use that as a foundation for a better way to do cross-platform management? And so we've really focused on getting to parity with Jamf, and so making it so that organizations that are using kind of that leader in the macOS space can start to switch over to Fleet, but also making sure that we're doing like a way better experience than anyone else on Linux and working towards getting to parity with Microsoft on the Windows thing. So there's a kind of a whole bunch of stuff to get to as like the foundational bar. And then we're working on things that are also inspired by, I would say, like our kind of engineering focus and open source background, like pushing things like configuration as code into the IT space here, where now people can use GitOps and put all their configuration files into a Git repo and have that automatically applied through their CI to the devices that they manage. And this is stuff that just like didn't exist yet in the IT space, and that a lot of teams are getting really excited to do.
When it comes to SaaS companies in particular, how do you see this is different? Is it something that SaaS companies should actually focus and do? I mean, the device management that you guys provide that service. Is it something that SaaS companies should actually pay more attention to, or it's not different than any other business? What flavor do you see that, you know, may be gravitated more towards SaaS companies in that regard?
Yeah, for sure. So SaaS companies, the thing that immediately comes to mind for me with SaaS companies is like SOC 2 Type 2. That's on everyone's minds. You pretty much need it to sell to any organization of size these days. And SOC 2 Type 2 is just going to expect from, part of the baselines there that you've got managed computing devices. And so you can drop in something like Fleet to do that. And in fact, if you are a smaller SaaS organization, you know, you can use the open source free version of Fleet to manage your Mac, Linux, and Windows devices and meet those kind of baselines. So it's, in some ways, it's not different from other organizations, but I think that it, particularly in the last several years, as SOC 2 has become so expected from even very small organizations, it's something that really needs to be done early on in the life cycle of a SaaS company. The other thing that's big for SaaS companies is, like, of course, we don't have just our employees' computing devices. We have our servers, or maybe our containers, if we're going down that road. And we probably have a bit less compliance pressure on that, but we have very real security and operational concerns due to the fact that our customers' data are on those systems. And something like Fleet, not only because it can manage the end user devices, but it can also manage the servers and containers. Or rather, I should say, it's more for baselining and collecting telemetry from the servers and containers. So you can have one platform where you're going to be able to see data across all the different types of computing devices that you have in the organization.
How do you see, for Fleet in particular, what's the vision? What's the grand vision? Where do you want, you know, to be the company in some years from now?
Yeah. I mean, the grand vision is to, again, sort of follow in the steps of GitLab. So continue building out a platform for managing all the computing devices and organizations, and doing that in a way that's open source, trustworthy, privacy focused. And so I think what that looks like over the next several years is making sure that we have a really good foundation of MDM for which is, again, kind of management for Mac and Windows that meets the standards set by Jamf on Mac and Microsoft on Windows. And then kind of pioneering what this looks like for Linux and some of our customer organizations who are really pioneering Linux as a first class option within their companies. And then continuing to push down some of the security fronts that we've been working on, like managing software vulnerabilities, software updating, and eventually, you know, possibly going down the path of EDR, endpoint detection response. But I think that really it's about, like, let's look at what does an organization, particularly a larger enterprise organization, need to do with the computers that they run. And, you know, we're talking everything from IoT to mobile devices, to laptops, to servers. What do they need to do with that? And how can they do it in one platform that's transparent, easy to use, developer focused, and reliable?
When it comes to open source and AI age, so far, you know, open source has been dealing with human. Now, if not today, very soon, you know, when you say it's open source, AI will have access to open source. And I wonder if you see any change with that regard. You know, there will be positive use cases, but also there will be some maybe, you know, bad use cases that AI can be employed by some people to really go there and read all of these and do something that, you know, may not be the great, you know, positive for companies to see. And in general, you may want to expand on any other impact that you think AI in general and Gen AI in particular might have in what you guys do. But in, so it different aspects, I would love to, you know, gain your insight on that.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the generative AI stuff, we are dabbling in that. I mean, I will say that the core of what we do is very fact-based. It's like, you know, we want this specific configuration applied to the device. We want to know exactly how this is configured, what processes are running, what network connections are running. And so we're writing, and can potentially use Gen AI to help write this kind of fact-based code, but it's not going to be AI executing those things. At least in the medium term. What AI we have found to be more useful here is, so we didn't talk about this much, but OS Query, the underlying project, that the agent that we use to collect all of this telemetry and these facts off the devices, it uses SQL, and in fact, literally SQLite syntax to write these queries that you can use to collect all this different information on the devices. And that's great for a lot of folks. They're very familiar with SQL. Other folks are like, I don't want to touch SQL with a 10-foot pole. And so the kind of things that we are finding interesting with Gen AI are like, you can say, hey, here's the documentation for all of the tables that are available. You know, write me a query that finds all the processes that have network connections open to this IP or something like that. And the AI can do a pretty good job of that. Where the AI is surprisingly reliable is sort of going the other way around, going, okay, here's this query that I wrote. Like, let's say I'm a security person or a compliance person, and I want to, I want to show my end users, like, well, why are we checking this thing? And I wrote this query, select star from processes join process open sockets where like the IP address is like something outside the corporate network or whatever. So we want to keep track of what remote connections are open. And what we have actually integrated all the way into the product is that you can kind of click a button and say like, take this query and now write a like a name for it, a human readable name for it, and a description for like, why is the organization looking for this kind of thing? And we found that like LLMs are actually quite good at going in that direction. And that can be really nice, again, because we're focused on this transparency kind of stuff and just letting engineers kind of focus on like, let me write the SQL and then like let the computer write the fluffy or easy part, if you will, and then let the human kind of check it and then hit the save button. And it's like, oh, that saved you 5 minutes of having to explain to your users. And it means that we are able to then show the end users why that information is being collected. So that, I think the kind of the both directions of that are the biggest future. I think that the foundation of our software is still going to remain very fact-based, very concrete. And we will, you know, we may, like any organization, be assisted, and we certainly have been at times assisted by LLMs in writing that code. But that's going to be just like normal software engineering code that's focused on gathering those facts and setting those configurations.
Also, in a different kind of dimension, there is, there will be more devices coming, right? So, and some of those are very consumer-oriented devices, but nonetheless, when they are connected to your computer and they get the information from your computer, you know, and those, today we are talking about just, you know, maybe a smartwatch or maybe a smart glasses or maybe some other things that, you know, coming to the future, different wristbands, or I don't know what kind of other devices we should expect in the future. But how does it work from device management perspective? Do you count them as kind of, this is also a device that companies should manage, or those are purely personal devices? We don't want to really get into managing those devices.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And typically it's going to depend on what kind of data those devices touch. So let's say it's someone's Apple Watch. That's probably going to be seeing corporate emails, right? If the user has that hooked up. In that case, the organization probably wants to manage it. If it's someone's Fitbit, I wouldn't want to touch it if I were in a security or IT person in an organization. You know, that's not going to have data relevant to the organization. So I think that, you know, these are exercises that folks and security and IT teams are constantly going through, sort of like, what is in our scope, particularly as we move to like hybrid and remote workforces, as we've seen BYOD with folks bringing more and more of their own personal, particularly mobile devices, into the organization. These questions really come up more and more. I think there are places where it's much more clear cut, where you see some slightly less traditional or maybe less expected for those of us in SaaS organizations, things like the factory robots on like an electric car manufacturer floor. Well, those get hooked up to Fleet for their management of their security baselines and that kind of thing. Like we have a customer who's doing that. And we have customers who are doing things like managing the iPads that are mounted outside their conference rooms to say, like, to show the calendar or let someone book the conference room, if you've seen those in like a modern San Francisco tech office. So we are seeing in the enterprises, we are seeing more of these different kinds of kind of newer and less traditional computing devices being brought into management through a tool like Fleet.
In your domain, when you really live and breathe in that kind of world of device management and open source, and you talk to a variety of companies, what are the surprising factors that you see that may surprise you, that, hey, these companies do not realize this, or surprisingly, maybe pleasantly or unpleasantly, these are the things that are here? Can you share a few of those experiences with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the really remarkable things that, you know, when you really walk back all the way through it, it ends up being not that surprising. But the really surprising thing is, you know, organizations with billions in revenue have actually vast swaths of their devices unmanaged. And this kind of stuff happens because they've acquired devices through acquisitions, and they never managed to kind of unify the management on those things. This happens because, like, they have a great solution for Mac and Windows, but nothing for Linux. And so you start to see that even in really sophisticated, really profitable organizations, they have all these devices that are unmanaged, and their executives are looking at this as risk. And it's risk to the organization to have these devices unmanaged. And it's not an easy problem really to start to unify all of these different kind of things because of the complexity of their operations. And so we've really worked towards trying to make it as easy as possible to get devices managed and as easy as possible to push different configurations and different baselines across all of the different kinds of devices and like organizational units in a complex organization. But yeah, it can be really surprising to come in and see that a big, you know, household name kind of organization has all of the stuff that they're still working to get properly managed.
Hmm. In a different way, smaller companies may neglect some of these kind of, you know, doing this device management for a different reason, right? So the big companies is just different, complex, it's variety of systems, but small companies, they have always, you know, different priorities, lack of resources. So in a way, it seems like the companies in the middle are the ones that probably are in the best situation from device management perspective. They are big enough that they have resources and they know this as a priority, but also, you know, they are not that big that it's too complex to manage everything.
Yes, I think that's definitely the case. And something else that's really interesting to observe is that a lot of these kind of middle-sized organizations, let's say from like 1,000 to 10,000 employees, they often have more unified security and IT functions. So they might all report up to the same executive. In the larger organizations, they often have a separate sort of CIO head of IT versus CISO, chief information security officer, head of security. And then the smaller organizations, they have no one. It's just like, hey, we're fighting for survival. We're doing the bare minimum that we can do to ship our product and get there. So I think that the early stage organizations have the opportunity to set a good foundation. The middle stage organizations really have the opportunity to solidify like a good unified security and IT function and good patterns, repeatable patterns in management across all of the devices that they're buying for their employees and they're getting through acquired organizations and that kind of thing. And the large organizations just have their work cut out for them, but luckily they tend to have quite a bit of revenue and longer timelines for getting these things done. But there's lots of hope for them as well.
So at the end, I would like to ask you, Zach, if you could share with us a book or, you know, a publication, something that you would enjoy, you know, reading it and it has been impactful one way or the other in your professional life or personal life.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe if it's okay, I'll share one from each. So I'd say the first would be from my professional life, the GitLab Handbook is just this amazing treasure trove of information about how GitLab runs their organization. And it's like, if you are a company that needs to figure out how to scale some portion of your operations, your culture, your organization, your sales, like your engineering, any of these things, like you can just go in there and find so much amazing information about that. And I think that's it, you know, that's cool the way that it lines up with the open philosophy that they've built. And so that's been super influential for us on our journey at building up Fleet from a, you know, a two-person seed stage startup to, you know, now getting close to Series B and 50 employees. That's been huge for us. And that's in my personal life. I just recently read a book called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, which was a really, really thoughtful reflection on sort of modern consumption and environmentalism and what we can kind of learn and find beautiful from indigenous cultures, particularly indigenous American cultures to kind of reconnect with the earth and with our humanity.
Interesting. Fantastic. Thanks again for joining us, being with us. Great discussion. I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armon Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.